Dana Howard. Diane. She came from Venus. Her first contact was in 1939. And many witnessed one of its materializations as told later down. Hear from Chapter 2. Every great sage has said, there is nothing in the universe impossible of accomplishment. Every philosopher and mystic has declared, whatsoever the human mind can imagine, it can ultimately achieve. Creation and recreation is as simple as that. The will to create is actualized throughout all nature. It is behind the science of all predictive arts. We know that every psychical experience comes to us from the reservoir of the unknown, but it is nonetheless real, for it portends the coming of future events. When the mind is properly attuned, it captures the universal flow of life. One day science will realize there is nothing supernatural, but only higher arcs of the natural exemplified. The coming of Diane, that lovely lady from Venus. The world might call an experience in the miraculous. Yet this strange happening proves there are points of specialization somewhere out in space. While the modus operandi of such a phenomenon is still beyond ordinary comprehension, it can be intelligently explained. Your author first made contact with Diane in June 1939. I quote from my flight to Venus. Still wrapped in the warm intoxication of the spirit, my vision was directed to an gnarled, nudrite, old tree overlooking the antediluvian hills. Leaning casually against the grotesque trunk was a woman being of unsurpassed loveliness. Her head was radiant with a crown of fire, strands of golden hair cascading gently over her beautiful, slightly olive-tinted shoulders. The strange mystic light flooding her dark, prophetic eyes added a wistful something to all her other charms. I seemed to glide on rhythmic feet toward this lovely creature as though she were expecting me. She smiled her welcome. Have no fears, child of earth, she intoned. Let the doors of your mind be opened and we of the far away planets will speak to you in poetry and song. It was then I observed for the first time a beautiful rocket-shaped ship suspended in mid-air about 300 feet from the earth. It was beyond mortal words to describe. In the main it seemed to be constructed of some sort of translucent materials, but trimmed in gold, and gem-studded. An almost invisible ladder extended from the ship to the earth, and I obediently followed the radiant being up the filmy stairs without questioning. Once aboard, my sacrosanct, Hellig/Ukrinklig, companion vanished, and I never saw her again. Materialization on April 29, 1955. Diane returned. This is how it happened. Reverend Bertie Lilly Candler, proclaimed by many as the greatest physical medium of the world, was holding a private seance at the Church of Divine Light, 837 South Parkview Street, Los Angeles, California. I had never attended a materialization seance before, and my inquiring mind asked all sorts of questions. As my cerebral atoms whirled with curiosity toward the close of the meeting, the little white church seemed to me electrified with a powerful vibration. Then some 10 or 12 feet from the draped-off area where Reverend Candler was in deep trance, I saw a rising glow of phosphorescence. It was very dull at first, but out of this phosphorescent substance a form began to manifest itself. She was definitely different from the other spirit manifestations, a solid, fleshly being, delicate in charm and manner. She called for Dana. Overwhelmed with emotion I could not choke back, I went up to her, standing only inches away from the manifestation. While I did not recognize her instantly, I knew there was something quaintly familiar about her. Standing like a sylph-like goddess, and bowing low in greeting to the 27 persons present, the rich tones of her voice vibrated through the little church. I am Diane. I come from Venus. One suggested to the vibrations she dwindled in size until judged her to be about 5 feet tall. As she tossed back the well-shaped head revealing her perfectly chiseled features, there was no mistaking her identity. She was the same being of unsurpassed loveliness who 16 years earlier had escorted me to the waiting spaceship. I was speechless at first, my thoughts stumbling over one another, I finally managed to say, "Are you my mentor? The person who has been giving me those wonderful discourses?" She answered, "Yes. This is the first time we of the Grit Planets have been permitted to come to beings of Earth. From now on we shall be with you, always." Diane then went into a few moments of profound discoursing, the content of which I could not recall later. Before taking her leave, as if to reassure me that she was not an imposter, she placed a corner of her jewel-bedecked garment in my hands that I might feel the texture of the fabric materials I quickly identified as Venusian. She then went into a beautiful, rhythmic dance described by one onlooker as the rhythm of the ocean waves. She finally bade us all good night, and with her fragile hand on my shoulder she melted into the nothingness. Lucille Points, of Los Angeles. One of the questers present on that memorable night says of the event, "I have had the opportunity of sitting through many materialization seances, but I shall never forget one particular evening this spring when Reverend Bertie Lily Candler had one of her very interesting and inspiring seances. A beautiful, fleshly being came, rather hesitantly at first, then saying, 'I am Diane. I come from Venus.' Since I was sitting next to the draped-off place, I greeted this beautiful one, asking, 'With whom do you wish to speak?' She replied softly, 'I wish to speak with Dana.' Dana Howard stepped up to her, but recognition was not instantaneous. Dana asked, 'Do I know you?' Diane replied, 'Why yes, my dear. I have been with you before. I came for you when you made your flight to Venus.' Mrs. Howard then asked her if the discourses she had been receiving since the publication of her book had been coming through her. Diane answered, 'Yes. I have been trying to help you write the experiences you had on Venus.' She gave such an interesting talk with so much love and with a soft, yet powerful voice. She then gave us somewhat of a butterfly waltz, as if floating on wings, her full flowing jeweled gown shining in the phosphorescent light. Yes. Truly I can say this was the most outstanding experience of my life." Lucille Points. Mrs. Gladys Campbell of Alhambra, California, and her friend Mrs. Maud Has, both of whom were present that night, have made a joint statement. On April 29, 1955, the writer, Mrs. Gladys Campbell, and my friend, Mrs. Maud Has, attended a materialization seance at the Church of Divine Light, 837 South Parkview Street, Los Angeles, California. The medium being Reverend Bertie Lily Candler of Florida, one of the foremost materialization mediums of this country. "I am more than happy to give an account of what I witnessed to the best of my recollection, and you will recall, when you spoke at the Pyramid Church in Alhambra the following Sunday after the visit, I was the one who got and verified your statements concerning the visit of Diane. It was truly a marvelous thing to be present and see for myself such a wonderful personality, and I know you must be very humble and gratified to have the facts that you brought before the public in your book My Flight to Venus, substantiated in such an unexpected manner." Mrs. Gladys Campbell, Mrs. Maud Has. The following letter from L. M. Cahill is still more explanatory. "Dear Dana Howard, I have for many years engaged in private research entirely separate and apart from my profession, into the possibility of the existence of many natural laws that affect or control the Earth and its people. Such investigation and study have occasionally brought M. into contact, during their lifetimes, with many persons engaged in various scientific activities, including Millikan, of the California Institute of Technology, Whitmore of the University of California, and Father Reichard of the University of Santa Clara. I have also carried my investigations and studies into the works of or records of many persons, including Jean Flammarion, Thompson, Kahn, Crookes, Lodge, Crandall Prince, and of Jesus of Nazareth as reported in the New Testament. I have occasionally given some thought to the possibility of greater scientific proof of the existence of the Earth entity after death, and that there may exist a law of communication, which would have application not only to persons living on other planets, but also to those who once were known as persons here, but who might be living in a different form at places not known to us now. Upon being informed last winter that the great materializing medium, Reverend Bertie Lilly Candler, had agreed to leave her church at Miami, Florida, for several weeks in April 1955, for the purpose of acting as visiting pastor to the Church of Divine Light at Los Angeles at the request of its pastor Reverend Beulah England. I decided, in furtherance of one stage of my work, to seek permission to witness one or more of the materialization meetings that it was believed would be held while the Reverend Candler was here. Such permission having been granted, I was privileged to witness over a number of months, the materialization of many so-called dead entities who appeared in Reverend England's church through the power of Reverend Candler, and not only talked audibly to their relatives, but who walked and danced and sang songs. After viewing and listening to 500 or more of such materialized spirit entities, and after talking personally to 20 or more such entities, I am of the opinion that the entity Diane that appeared to you on April 29, 1955, during a meeting where Reverend Candler was functioning was an entirely different entity than the others. The difference is hard to describe, but I will do the best I can. She was in human form. A beautiful female dressed in white. Yards and yards of soft flowing material that gave the impression of chiffon. I was soon to realize, however, that underlying the white material, or possibly underlying part of same, was a distinct blue effect. I heard the entity speak your name and saw you move out of the group of approximately 30 men and women present and approach her. The first word I heard her say was Diane. Then followed some conversation in low tone, and as I recall it she said, Diane is my earth name. The entity then moved very gracefully forward and toward the center, from the sidelines, of the church and performed a dance of a type or style of which I had no previous knowledge. The motion was rolling, as of ocean waves, the body was moving in a rolling motion and in what appeared to be an arc, or a series of such. The dancing continued for about 1 minute, and the entity, after what appeared to be a final word to you, disappeared as suddenly as she had appeared. I would be very foolish to attempt to describe the beauty of this entity, or the graceful rhythm of her dancing, or the perfume that so definitely followed her. I do not care for the commonly used phrase out of the world, but that is what it appeared to me and to those present. I believe I am well on the road to being able to place before others, if requested, a scientific explanation of all of the other entities, but as to this one I do not have even a sound theory for the present. Sincerely yours, L. M. Cahill. A final statement from Reverend Beulah England should prove conclusively that Diane was not an ordinary materialization, but something beyond the scope of knowledge of all those present. Dear Dana Howard, this is to state that I have known Reverend Bertie Lilly Candler for many years and can honestly vouch for the authenticity of her work. She has worked in my church many, many times and has drawn her audiences from the highest brackets of society, doctors, lawyers, educators and just plain everyday folks. I consider what happened at my church on April 29 a miracle. I no longer look upon it as a church but as a shire that will help many people with their problems. My only regret is I missed part of Diana's appearance. I was growing late and two or three of my guests had to leave by way of the back door to go home. When I returned I saw the beautiful woman standing there, and knew that nothing like it had ever come before. I sincerely believe it was not spirit apparition as the others had been, but a physical being from another planet. Whether she was teleported direct from Venus or whether she came from one of the spaceships seen by members of the Air Force over Mrs. Howard's hometown at the same time she appeared in my church, I do not know. I do know this is the greatest privilege Reverend Beulah England will have in this lifetime. Sincerely, Reverend Beulah England. The appearance of the lovely Diane in the Little Y Church in Los Angeles is only one side of the miracle that occurred on April 29, 1955. Out on the desert where your author resides during resort season, another miracle had happened. Mrs. Barbara McDonald, a member of the Ground Observation Corp, a civilian agency attached to the Air Force, reported that her skywatchers had broadcast four strange ships seen high in the desert skies during the week of Diane's visitation. There was no chance for error here. Later down. No exaggerated rumors, for all sightings were the result of observers detailed to duty, Air Force volunteers whose task it is to spot and report any unusual happening or any alien ship seen in the skies. These skywatchers, working different shifts, all gave the same account. Mrs. McDonald reports that H.A. Mooney, a young man well trained in sky phenomena and only recently out of the Navy, stated he saw a huge ship very high over the desert skies and traveling at a startling rate of speed. Although the ship was of gargantuan size, there was no tail fire and it was absolutely noiseless. Mooney stated it revealed a long row of odd-looking portals from which streamed radiant fire. It vanished into nothingness before his eyes. Mrs. McDonald further relates that a few nights later, Jan Carlisle, secretary of a prominent Palm Springs attorney, another duly appointed skywatcher, reported a similar happening. This ship was virtually the same in appearance. It was described as unusual in size, the same long row of portholes and traveling at fabulous speed. It too was noiseless. Repeating substantially the same story as young Mooney, the ship vanished into thin air while the watcher's eyes were upon it. Again, Mrs. McDonald tells of another similar incident. Ricky Anderson, another skywatcher and a decided unbeliever in the saucer theory, reported a few nights later the appearance of two such ships traversing the desert skies. He described the light streaming from the portholes as a luminous blue-white light. The ships were traveling in an easterly direction and he followed them over the little town of Thousand Palms, California, but like the others they disappeared into the invisible beyond. Your author has been reliably informed that all four sightings have been duly classified by the Air Force as unidentified flying objects. Again, a few nights later, the townspeople of Desert Hot Springs, California, a health resort located 10 miles from Palm Springs, were alerted by a different kind of craft. Flying the skies, almost directly over my home, Joe and Marion Merrick made this sighting report. It was 7 o'clock in the evening, say the Merricks. We were sitting on our front porch when suddenly we saw a strange object in the sky. The forepart of the ship a huge orange disc, the tail portion made up of blue-green lights which seemed to flash a luminosity over the desert sky. It was broad daylight and visibility over the broad expanse of open desert made the sighting stand out in bas-relief. We watched it for quite a long time. There was no wind. A quiet still desert evening. Then as suddenly as it appeared it took off at great speed and disappeared into thin air. Joe and Marion Merrick, Desert Hot Springs, California. This sighting was confirmed by countless other individuals, but I quote from the lips of Mrs. Agnes Gentile, who has been a desert resident for many years and familiar with desert sky phenomena. I was out of doors with the children, says Mrs. Gentile. My little granddaughter saw it first. She looked upward and screamed. There was this fantastic thing, a huge ball of orange fire with a long tail of brilliant blue-green light. It so frightened the children they ran screaming into the house. Alice Gentile. Now comes the poser, where did these strange ships come from? Are there transporting currents in the atmosphere about which you I scientists know nothing? Will voyaging to the stars be a common place when we learn these secrets? Again, it was the lovely Diane teleported from one of these ships, or did she come over the clouds from Venus? Are the ships equipped with some sort of mechanism capable of rendering them invisible as it would appear? Perhaps teleportative methods is the answer to their sudden appearance and the same abrupt disappearance. There seem to be no differing accounts in this particular. Their speed and maneuverability is beyond our comprehension. They seem to flash through the skies with lightning, quick velocity, then, without a wave of warning, dissolve into nothingness. Is this the way God works his miracles? Is this something we might hope for out of our own illimitable future? On page 39, the author tells of her own trip to the higher levels of planet Venus and how the dimension barrier, light barrier, was passed. Others have told of similar experiences when the ship seems to make a dimension jump. Few lines from my flight to Venus illustrates this point perfectly. During flight we seemed to penetrate many dimensions of abstract space. There was no static. No interference. Then something happened. It was like a gentle explosion of gorgeous colors accompanied by an experience akin to an orgasm of spirit and matter. There was no time after that. No space in the usual connotation of space. All was consciousness. Absolute consciousness. Many times since that memorable date I have tried to arrive at some logical conclusion as to what actually happened. Did I leave my body behind, traveling only in a fine vehicle? Or was it true teleportation and I took my body with me? Did the atoms of my body actually disintegrate at one point, re-materialize in another? I am sure the form that housed the beautiful spirit of Diane was composed of pure protoplasm, the essence of all things. It was apparent too that the other spirit manifestations that appeared in the Church of Divine Light were made up of the usual ectoplasms drawn from the medium and the guests. There is as wide a difference between protoplasm and ectoplasm as there is between flesh and spirit. Many of those present observed the breastplate that seemed to fit over Diane's gown. This was obviously the hub, the center point of contact where fusion takes place. From this point the plasms are united and molded into manifestation. From this magnetized center Diane could follow the lines of force traveling over the face of the Earth and also traversing every star and planet in the entire universal system. Plasms are existent in all higher ethers. Plasm is the true creative substance. It is the substance used in spiritual healing. When we learn how to control the plasms we will have done away with ailing bodies. Universal cooperation is all-worldly. There are worlds on every level of existence, worlds within worlds, each one functioning according to its own fixed rhythm. All are blended or welded into the greater universe. When we have conquest of space, like the Venusians, we will be able to reach them, one and all. We will be able to draw on the consciousness of these worlds. Then we jump to page 53 and the chapter, The Meaning of God. It was early morning and the golden sands of the desert were breakfasting on the first glow of the sun's actinic rays. I loved to walk at this hour when all the unseen little people were gay, filled with the spirit of the new, born day. I could see them now in my mind's eye as they danced with the rhythm of abandonment, tuned with the orchestration of the spirit of life. Making my way over the wind, swept sand dunes drinking in inspiration for my day of work, I came to a sudden halt. It had happened many times of late, a tingling sensation of my body, bells ringing from afar, the fragrance from beautiful flowers, strains of melody floating in from out of the nowhere. A patch of soft sand beneath a sprawling greasewood bush beckoned to me. It was an ecstatic moment, that sharpening of the perceptions of my mind. Then emerging with an alien something as though I were being hooked up with all the main lines of the cosmos. This cosmic clairvoyance I had come to welcome, for I knew I would soon be honored by her saintly presence. Then came the concordant tone of voice I had come to know so well. Child of Earth. It is with the spirit of gladness I greet you this day out on the clean desert sands. It was from the same clean sands we of Venus found our way to the throne of God. We did not arrive at our journey's end by way of platitudes and dramatic petitions. You will find our footprints one by one over the stepping stones to the arcs of Venusian splendor. Out where the wilderness is wild, you too will come to know the meaning of God. This is the lesson Earthman must learn, my child. He has chosen the arduous way through supplication and sacrifice. He has tried to reach God as though he were trying to climb a ladder of gold, rung by rung. Just as your plodding footsteps have moved slowly over the evolutionary sands of time, just so your approach to God's throne has been a slow, paced crawl. Many start, but few arrive. The rungs of the golden ladder are broken before the throne is reached. Through the long eons of time, from our exalted summit, we have watched the milling masses of Earth's children. We have seen them stumble along Earth's hills and valleys. Our lights have beamed over the bright spots, they have tarried longer over the areas where tears have rained down upon the bloody paths man of Earth has ordained to travel. At times our lights have burned with luminous intensity, at other seasons only a dim flicker could find its way through the fog. Yes, child of Earth, we have watched our younger brethren stumble and fall. We have observed him on bended knee before the altars of Earth's temples. How harrowing have been his entreaties for the favors of God! But here has been where earth, man has erred. Though ardent have been his prayers, though bountiful has been his praise and thanksgiving, not always have his invocations reached the Supreme over them all. In fact, rarely does earthman raise his vibrations to the God level. Few worship God in the same way. To some God is love. To others God is power. To many he is intelligence. And so on and on. The way to God's throne is not segment by segment. It requires no ritualistic drama, but rather it is as simple as turning on your electric light switch, or turning the ignition key on your motor car. We Venusians know that God is the source of all things. We know that he is everywhere present. That he is in every created thing. We know that God owns, the universe. That we own nothing. Human life comes into being unbound by possessions. The harvest man gathers through life he cannot take with him when he departs. All things are loaned by God. They are treasures to be glorified while we use them, but we know that one day we must give them back to him from whence they came. Being eternally aware that we own nothing of ourselves, that God's beneficent storehouses are ever open to us from the smallest need to the grandest luxury we borrow freely on a prodigious scale. God trusts us to pay our honest debts. He knows we will not misapply his treasures. That we will return his gifts at the close of our day. Child of earth, prayers to God need not be abstruse, vansklig. God knows the needs of his children before they ask. His blessings he has created for their advantage. Does not your Bible state, "In the beginning was the Word and the Word was made flesh"? Do you believe that, my daughter? It means, does it not, that we have only to tune our thoughts to God's thoughts, to speak and all blessings shall be ours. In the conception of God, man's daily manna and castles of gold are of the same equal value. When God is enthroned in our hearts we are part of the very breath of creation, small or large. No, my daughter, ours is not a miracle existence. We are not what earthman calls magicians. We possess no magical formulas. God is our magic. God is our formulas. Authors and theologians alike have endeavored to expound this principle, but few there are who have applied it to the worship of their daily lives. Though men of earth have built fences and pillars of marble around God's glorified concepts, at the same time he has never bothered to remove the boulders he has placed in the way of his true understanding. Child of earth, the greater number of earth's children have never learned their mission toward God. Earthman has not known the way of his birth. My daughter, God's children are brought into fleshly manifestation that they might gain needed experience. Man goes out from God's house an infant in understanding. He returns a sage. He is sent over roads dotted with thorns and thistles, often he must swim through a river of tears, but this is only that he might find himself, by himself. God knows that one day he will return mature with knowledge and experience. He knows he is but a prodigal, fortapsa, son. Why has earthman been so blind? Why has he accepted eons of years of suffering? My daughter. Only because he has persuaded himself that the earth plane is all there is. Earth, man has been haughty in his self-importance. To gain superiority over all things earthly has been his vain, glorious ambition. His lordly goal. Earthman has chosen the illusion of growth. He has exalted man, made scientific grandeur over the majesty of God's universe. He swells with pride at the sound of the hammer. He thrills to the blade of the sword. Seldom does he pause in the silence to breathe in God's wondrous sunshine. Rarely does he accept that which his senses have not substantiated. Earthman, believing all is contained within his own plane of existence, has gone contrary to the echo in his heart. He has floundered in the illusions he has built up for himself. From our exalted heights we have beseeched earthman to listen, to turn his gaze upward. But more often than not his vision has been blinded by his egotistical viewpoint. Our lights have blinded him rather than inspired him. The world's ethereal, the star, strewn heavens, the planets so far away to him, they are all a part of an unsolved enigma. Earthman prefers it that way. A few short years of earthly sojourn, offered, then the state equals death. Only birth and death and the time between does he comprehend. God knows no boundaries, concrete or ethereal. We know that nothing is born of man, even superior man. Forms may come and go, but that which animates form goes on forever. My daughter, Earthman is a born procrastinator, etc. To him today does not exist, only yesterday and tomorrow. God dares not procrastinate, forsink, for one single, infinitesimal moment. Should he do so, the very heavens would tumble down. God does not slumber. He does not rest. Never for one instant does he relax his vigilance, for with God there is no beginning and no ending. The crudities of today are the perfections of tomorrow. All things stream out from source. All things go back to source. We Venusians have learned how to control and utilize this source material. It is the taproot of our greatness, for plasms are the substance of the soul. Child of Earth, remember always, God preceded all thought. He preceded all form. God is as close to you as breath itself. You have only to throw the switch to reach God's powerhouse. And there is but one power. It is the motivating force, Drivkraften, behind all manifest creation. There is but one God, a God to be worshipped in his essence, not in his image. I take my leave now, child of earth, she said. The tap of her long tapering fingers I felt upon my shoulder, the light touch of her holy kiss, I felt upon my lips. Diane vanished as she came, back into the invisible ethers.